The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
It is The Hard Shoulder. It's Anton in for Kieran, and I'm joined by Ellen Butler, News Talk journalist, and Brian Mann, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, for the afternoon update. And let's start, Ellen, with the teachers' conferences, because there have been a number of different issues, as one would expect, emerging through the conference season. Prime amongst them, issues to do with a sharp rise in sexual images generated and shared among primary school students.
Yeah, so as you say, teacher conference season, given that all three of the main teaching unions are meeting this week, the INTO, the TUI and ASDI. That one, of course, I'm sure will feature, as will the impact of social media and technology on classrooms. This was from Commissioner Naman, informed the Education Minister, Norma Foley, that there's been what they describe as a sharp increase. Now, the figures, I don't know, to be honest, but a sharp increase in 7 to 10 year olds self-generating sexual images, which...
Self-generating?
Yeah.
So 7 to 10?
7 to 10 year olds. So we're talking, as people have pointed out, Holy Communion age children, you know. So it's, as you say yourself, quite shocking.
But it would be shocking if they had access to mobile phones.
Yeah.
Never mind sharing.
So it taps into this wider conversation. Like, I don't know about you, Brian, but I did not have a mobile phone in primary school. It's not that long ago. And
it's longer than we think, unfortunately.
Yeah. And is it necessary? Like, why would a child need a phone? And with a phone, you're just opening this Pandora's box of your child just being able to access, as well we know, and sometimes for beneficial for adults, a whole host of information online. And there's not the regulation there to go with it. So it is alarming from that point of view that, you know, kids have access to phones at that age.
Other issues also emerging, Brian, I suppose a bit like the medical profession. Teachers saying a lot of pressure in terms of teachers getting coaxed away once qualified to foreign shores.
Yeah, I remember a story we did, maybe it's 12, 15 months ago now, where it was floated that perhaps they might change the rules around career breaks so that you wouldn't be able to keep your job at home while also going off to Dubai. I think after an outcry by the unions and others, that was dropped fairly quickly. But it seems like one of those things that, to me, seems like a no-brainer. If I suggested to my boss that I was going to go off to Dubai for 3 or 4 years, but keep that political correspondent gig for me when I get back, I'd be given the boot out the door.
Well, there again, on the other side of it, you have more and more large employers now actively incentivizing career breaks. A lot of the big professional services firms say to some of their most senior staff, take 3 months, 6 months. I realise not 3 years, but take 3 or 6 months, go away and we'll hold the gig for you when you come back.
But I think the flip side of it is where you have teachers, newly trained teachers or other teachers going in and backfilling these posts who are only on the temporary contracts as well. So you have people leaving, keeping a job, and then you have people covering that job, but they don't get the full-time contract as well. So no one's happy except maybe the teacher out in Dubai.
And you're not going to buy a house somewhere not having a secure job. You know, you don't know when that person comes back, where you'll be.
Speaking of people departing jobs, the big news today, Brian, I assume there has been a lot of discussion among other political correspondents, the departure of Simon Coveney from Cabinet. Was he pushed or did he come to his conclusion himself, do you think?
An excellent question. It looks like to me that he was told that you can go of your own volition or we can push you. I don't have any evidence for that, but from reading between the lines, that's what it looks like to me. In Athlone, at Simon Harris's coronation a couple of weeks ago, he insisted he was running when he was on the Clare Byrne show today on another parish. He said, that's not a question for today. So it looks like he's maybe made a decision in the interim after numerous conversations with the incoming Taoiseach and leader of Fine Gael about his future.
And this, of course, links to Simon Harris making clear at the outset that thing of, you need to give me a commitment that you'll run in the next election if you're going to get a cabinet position. Do we have any insight? Is there any... Does the smart money know whether it was that Coveney had decided he wasn't running and therefore got the sense that a cabinet position wasn't for him? Or that when he found that his popularity was not what it might have been with Simon Harris, he decided, I'm not running again?
Well, I mean, look, he's been in the cabinet for, I think, 13 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a savage amount of time. I would think I was still in secondary school, certainly in college, when he first became a cabinet minister.
It's very unusual.
So it's an awful lot of time to ask of someone. I mean... It looks like it's probably a bit of both insofar as the Fine Gael rather, does want to refresh its leadership team, its cabinet kind of team. And Simon Harris has been around the longest, and he said he doesn't want to be a leader.
Again. I mean, Ellen, there is precedent. I mean, yes, there were gaps in it, but Micheál Martin was in the cabinet in 98, 2000, was that when he originally got his first? So you have 20 years of cabinet ends. There was nothing to, I would have thought, preventing Coveney from continuing.
Yeah, I suppose so. Like, it's a funny one because this appears to have been coming for quite a while. Like, in political circles, it was said that he'd kind of lost his zest, the zest for politics. So I think a lot of us were expecting it to come. Like you say, I don't know about
was Simon Harris known for being zesty at any point?
Well, I mean, he'd be considered more so than others in the cabinet, yeah.
He's zesty on TikTok, you know.
Yeah, you have to be on TikTok more often. And
sorry, Simon Coveney, I mean, rather than Simon Harris, meaning exactly. So what does this then mean for the party in Cork? Because there is a general sense that you cannot fight a general election if you're Fine Gael without a cabinet minister or at least a frontbench spokesperson if you're in opposition representing Cork.
Yeah, well, like any position, there's always a political resignation. There's always a queue of people lining up to replace them. And I think in Cork, one of the big names is Jerry Buttermer, of course, the current Cathaoirleach of the Shannon, and I believe former TD. So I suppose he'd be lining up to take that gig, should that arise.
I think Fine Gael would want, I mean, if they don't have a seat in Cork South Central, then they're really in big trouble. But more to the point, I think it's Cork South West, I'm open to correction, which is Michael Collins' kind of heartland. They don't have a TD there either. So Tim Lombard, who's currently a senator, will, I think, be looking for that seat as well. But the party isn't as strong in Cork as it maybe traditionally once was. So there's a lot of former rules that we always understood about Irish politics kind of intuitively that maybe no longer hold true.
So is it sufficient then that Buttermer gets on the ticket, or does Buttermer need to get a bounce, like an appointment direct to cabinet through the Senate to burnish him slightly before he's offered to the electorate?
Jerry Buttermer should be winning a seat in Cork South Central regardless. And I would think it would be a long shot for him to be even thinking of getting anywhere into government. I know the Green Party do it. Pippa Hackett is in the Shannon and she's a junior minister. So, I mean, it can be done.
Garrett did it at one stage. Wasn't there a direct appointment out of the Senate back in the olden times?
Way before my time, but I think that caused ructions back in the day as well. So,
so what then of Coveney? What does somebody do who is, I would have thought, relatively young, if this means the end to what was once a very promising political career?
Yeah, I believe 52 years of age. And like
a mere
you say,
child.
Gone are the days, really, that you enter politics at 20 or 21 and you're there till retirement. I think it's a sign of changing times that you just don't get that so much anymore. And there's a few different reasons for that. And I suppose social media does play a role there. I don't know how they tolerate the abuse that's levelled against them, to be honest. But there's plenty of opportunities out there for someone like that with quite a good track record in government. 13 years at the cabinet table. Who knows? He's also got a family, so that does play into it. I suppose gone are the days where a man could go up to Dublin and spend a couple of days in the Dáil or whatever and not have to worry about those kind of responsibilities. So,
I mean, he could do a Richard Bruton on it, or there's any number of Fine Gael TDs who are on the older end of the spectrum who are retiring for age reasons. And Simon Coveney would kind of fit that mould of someone who may do politics for the rest of their life. But equally, he's been a cabinet minister for over a decade, as I've said. He's been involved in COVID, Brexit negotiations. He's been out in Europe for over a decade. There are any number of business companies and advisory boards that would only love to have someone with his kind of insight and level of experience to pay him a nice princely sum every year for his insight and wisdom.
You'd not be bored.
He might be. He might want a full-time job, but he has options.
But in terms of jobs, I mean, politics may be extraordinarily difficult. It may be one where you get an awful lot of abuse. It is undoubtedly one that is 24/7 when it's on the go. It is nothing if not interesting, though.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's interesting to see that Alan Shatter is talking about a bid for Europe, which we have in the Irish Daily Mail today. Finian McGrath, I think, is in his 70s. He's making another run for it. I mean, if it's in the blood and you've been doing it all your life, I imagine it is hard to just turn off all of a sudden and tune out.
It's all you've ever known.
Yeah.
And that's effectively what Finian McGrath more or less said, that he tried this retirement lark and just missed it.
Yeah.
Texas, by the way, I should say, we did obviously ask Simon Coveney to join us on the programme, but the indication that we got was that it was a one and done, that he had said all that he was going to say and wasn't going to be much for talking beyond that, but we were told that he wasn't available anyway. Texas, Simon Coveney has a young family and he's done a long stint, so why are you so surprised? I think the reason that I am surprised is I would have thought that if you have climbed your way up what is a very greasy pole to the point at which you have been within sniffing distance of a possible Taoiseachship, where you've got one of the most senior ministries, where you are seen as a party stalwart and a senior figure. You've done so much of the heavy lifting to get there that surely now is the time that you exploit all of that work rather than calling it quits.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think maybe he got burned at the last leadership contest. That took a lot out of him, because I know he even referenced that when he pulled out of or announced that he wouldn't be contesting the leadership this time around. He said he's had his go, I think was the phrase he used.
But I was kind of getting two competing kind of schools of thought on Simon Coveney up to a couple of months ago, up to even just before Simon Harris became leader. One was that he did still have kind of ambition, and not to get too into the weeds, but Fine Gael were going to change how their leadership kind of election process worked so that it would give maybe more power to the members. And remember, he won the membership vote last time against Leo Varadkar. Then he went on the 6-1 and said, I made my mind up a couple of years ago. I didn't want to do it. And to be fair, from talking to other Fine Gael TDs and senators, he wasn't doing kind of the hard yards, bringing guys out for coffee and for lunch and all that sort of stuff that Simon Harris definitively was doing and made it look easy a couple of weeks ago. But that all came from doing a lot of plumose.
Texas says, Coveney has presided over a housing and a health crisis, not to mention an immigration crisis. He will struggle to get a good job. I would have thought there's significant precedent there for cabinet ministers being very employable post their cabinet stints, regardless of whether or not they've been involved in public crises.
Absolutely. I mean, I just think it's... I'm a former lobbyist in another life. I'm a journalist now, and you see kind of politics and kind of power up a bit up close. And when you realise the knowledge that these people do accrue that we as journalists never find out about, but they're able to impart in a confidential setting for, I would imagine, a very nice sum, he'll be absolutely fine.
Is it knowledge or is it contacts? What is it that they are selling if they end up? I mean, a bit like McCreevy going to Ryanair on the board. If you do that kind of thing, do people, is it the contact book that you have? Is it the relationships or is it the insights?
I think it's the contact book initially, but then also you just know how the machinery of government works, and you know kind of how the civil servants, the permanent government, think and act about these things.
If you're trying to lobby the government, there's no better resource than a former member of government.
Yeah.
We were speaking about the career breaks for teachers because it's teacher union meeting season, if that is a term. Anton, re-teacher career breaks. I'm a teacher, 16 years in my school. I have been refused one. It's up to the school. Many people are refused. The needs of the school come first. I have a colleague who got accepted for one this year because the school are over quota with teachers re-pupil ratio. So it's a way to balance the numbers, giving a break without losing that teacher permanently. Another, career breaks are a win-win, certainly in primary schools. I've been on both sides of the coin. It's taking an unemployed teacher off the live register. The service of the teacher who is filling in is then counted towards a full-time job. Sheer begrudgery. Career breaks are wonderful for individuals and therefore society in so many ways that I can't elaborate on in a text. Our attitudes towards work-life balance and so forth have improved. Well, if you run out of space with a text, thehardshoulder@newstalk.com, feel free to give it to us by email and we will return to it afterwards. Before we wrap up, Ellen, this is International Children's Book Day. What does that mean?
It is indeed. We seem to have a day for everything these days. I thought it was World Book Day recently enough, which is the big one. So this is specifically for children's books. But sure, look, it's great to have children reading, so why not?
Have you a favourite?
Reminiscing on my childhood reading, I suppose the big standout one for people my age would be Harry Potter.
Does that count as child? Is that not young adult?
Well, famously, Miriam Margolyes hit out at adults nowadays who are still obsessed, as she said,
and
with Harry Potter.
She's correct to do so.
I kind of tend to agree with her, yeah. She said people now having Harry Potter themed weddings and this kind of thing, they need to let it go that it's a children's book. Now, I thought it was probably a bit harsh. But yeah, that, I think it is, isn't it? Characterised as a children's book. So. Yeah.
I should know this offhand. She was in it.
She was in it. She played the herbology professor.
Yeah, whose name now escapes us collectively.
Yes.
She was also the caramel bunny, which I think was her high point. But putting that to one side, Brian, favourite children's book?
I love the Hardy Boys, which were kind of
again,
like...
Again, is that not young adult?
Well, I was reading them from a very young age. I remember it was also...
He was very,
well,
Brian was very advanced, yeah.
Famous Five, Secret Seven, we went to the library.
Roald Dahl as well, yeah. Sorry.
I wrote a book when I was a child, actually.
Did you?
Age 12, yeah.
You precocious. Yeah.
It was the Pushkin Awards or something. I was looking back over it. It was called The Silencer.
Ooh, available in all
you got it published and...
Well, I self-published, as people call it these days.
Does the Famous Five bear rereading. It's one of those where I worry. You think, oh, I wonder is that filled with jingoism that I don't want to rediscover?
Potentially, but I read them all and I don't think I turned out to be a racist. So, you know, I read them when I was 11 or 12. So
I think
it goes over kids' heads. Like, they get the main gist of the story.
Exactly.
It's a fun narrative.
He's a big Mallory Towers fan.
Is there probably, quote unquote, problematic elements in it? But they're written in the 50s and 60s. It'd be strange if it wasn't.
A fine point. Brian Mann, thank you. Brian Mann, author and political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Ellen Butler, News Talk journalist. Thank you both very much. And we've been asking, our own Henry McKean has been asking young people, what are their favourite books? Here's the favourite book of young Kit McKean.
My name is Kit. My age is 6. My favourite book is 101 Dalmatians, because I like dogs.
Fair play. I assume, Kit McKean, that would suggest that there is a link there, but I won't push it too far in case I am wrong.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.